Welcome to Talking Insights. I'm your host, Antonio, and today we continue our series, Voices of Market Research, where we highlight an important figure of the industry, which today is Elise Mies, the Global Strategic Insights Director at Ricola. It was a great conversation that we both had about psychology, burnout, and the workplace culture and leadership. Stay tuned. I hope you learned something new. You grew up as a competitive swimmer, you're studying organizational psychology, and worked in consumer behavior, employee manager, workplace relationships in a few different companies. So I just want to say thank you for taking some time of your busy schedule to be here and share some insights and inspiration with us. So thank you for being here, Elise.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
And I wanted to start by asking, what initially drew you to the field of market research and insight?
Yeah, I think I just fell into it, quite frankly. I mean, like you said, I grew up as a competitive swimmer, so I started swimming at the age of 5. And I think I spent more time probably smelling like chlorine and in the swimming pool than in the classroom. So yeah, I really just fell into it. I got a scholarship and I swam all throughout my childhood through college and now just as a master's swimmer, so a lot slower, a lot fatter, but I enjoy it. And when I came back from the US where I did swimming and studying, I really just wanted to keep learning. So I was studying marketing and I wanted to do postgraduate studies. And I came across the Ehrenberg-Bass Institute for Marketing Science. So you may have heard of that, but it's basically a team of scientists and they look at all the science-based methods and how brands really grow. So a lot of folks might know the little blue and red books, How Brands Grow by Byron Sharp. And I was fortunate enough to then, just fall into that world, I think. So I did my master's on brand distinctiveness. So really looking at all those elements that make a brand stand out, whether it be color, taglines, logos, or so forth, and really understanding how brands grow. So that's what really set my professional life and how I fell into it some 2 decades ago. And I think personally, I just like to solve wicked problems as well. I like to fix things and solve wicked problems, and consumer insights can play a big part of that. So whether it's like people at work or understanding relationships or consumers, one thing is that I just love to understand what makes people tick. What's really driving the behavior? So that's where I began.
And and that's great. And you've been doing it so far, so good. I saw that on your, I went to research a bit on LinkedIn and I saw that you had that catchphrase and I loved it. Like, to understand what people tick is such a good tag. Yeah, I love that. And you mentioned that, I mean, you work with a bunch of different things from PR, communications, media, innovation. You work on all these things. How do we integrate these diverse areas into your approach of market research?
I mean, yeah, I think I've been fortunate enough to work at different companies, you know, consumer insights or media, PR, communications, whatever it may be. I think where I come from is I don't start from the methodology, but it's really about understanding the business question. So, you know, what is the business question? What are the teams really trying to achieve? And that often takes a few goes, right? Sometimes, you know, the team may come and say, okay, I want to do this innovation idea and I need to buy this data in France. Well, that's not really a business question or a brief. So I just like to start from the question, spend time on the brief, a really clear brief. And that means, you know, looking at the business question, but also what action are you going to do from it? What's the success criteria? Then develop the research questions. And I think an important part is also asking your stakeholders, you know, what do you already know? Have you even looked at the research existing in the business? And what would you do without this research, actually? Because I think as market researchers, I think sometimes we can be guilty of doing too much. And we already know a lot of times in the company. So it's like, is what we have good enough? Or do you really need a new piece of research? So I'd say that's really the starting point. And I'd say learning is not really the hard part. I think most people can learn just about anything. So I think the real challenge is just, you know, creating that right environment for learning and innovation. And also just to make those learnings, to make an impact as well. So the methodology comes after, but I think now the shift is really about integration. You mentioned the word integration, but it is, you know, not just delivering a piece of research or a certain methodology, but also connecting the dots to what you already know, you know, looking at the trends and forecasting and just linking all that together. I think that's where the magic really happens.
And that, yeah, when I'm doing these interviews and when I'm doing meeting these people, people like you, when doing these interviews, we keep mentioning like doing your homework and keep being, you know, keep learning. No one can say that they're okay. I just learn everything. I know everything, and I don't want to do it anymore. Just, you know, I know enough. I think that's like, you need to keep pushing it yourself and keep learning new tricks, new skills. And that kind of leads me to the point, you're studying at the right now, right? You're taking a PhD. It's about organizational psychology. And I was going to ask, like, how does that influence your work? And how do you apply psychology into understanding the consumer and the workplace principles?
Yeah, I mean, I think firstly, to your point, it's just about giving people the chance to learn. I mean, and looking at the best way that they can learn, whether it's a doctorate or something else. I think the research actually shows if managers, if leaders give their employees a chance to learn, and that means in different disciplines, it doesn't have to be their day job, but it can help you bring a different perspective, a unique perspective. And we know the research with diversity and inclusion, that can really lead to better decision-making, better creative problem solving. And I think especially because what I'm studying is relationships between employees and their managers. So it's a very sensitive topic because then it's looking at, well, how does that impact their well-being and in the worst case, burnout? And I think what consumers say versus what they do, that can be very different. So they might say one thing, but actually they go and do something else. So I think we really have to understand the why and look at creative, like implicit ways of how they're doing that. So that's, you know, I'm looking at implicit ways through my research. So looking at relationships and you know, for example, getting people to draw as well, getting that sort of subconscious out and getting people to do drawings and help them to explain. And I think that we can lean into more of these sort of techniques when it comes to consumer behaviors as well. So I think also, you know, one thing working across all these different companies is that we have so much data. Data is not our problem. We have way too much. And I think in a lot of cases, we're just confused by so much data. And then the new requests come in asking for even more data, quantitative data. And I don't think that's always what we need. I think we have to connect the different dots, but we have to also look at qualitative data, talking to people, understanding the why between the what and the why. And then also just, I think, practicing creating that environment of that non-judgmental space. I mean, in my doctorate studies, you know, I'm asking them about, this is oversimplified language, but good managers and bad managers. And, you know, oftentimes it was very difficult to get people away from talking about bad managers because it sticks in our brains. But I think it's really important to give people that space, that non-judgmental space where they will open up. And they will share stories. Otherwise, you've got no insights to really begin with. So I think these sort of things are sort of just practice being a better researcher, a better interviewer, finding new and innovative ways to actually get to your discoveries and your insights is really important. And I think there are tons of ways people can learn as well. So that's just one.
Yeah. And sometimes I feel like it's almost like the soft skills. People kind of lack some sort of soft skills in their work, like networking, simple stuff that we do it kind of, you know, involuntarily, but at the same time, we kind of sometimes forget to do it.
Yeah.
I feel like some things you can teach, but I feel like it's part of a manager and that relationship between the employee and the manager to provide those tools and to provide those kind of trainings, right? I don't know, for the employee to be integrated in it and be engaged with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And especially because at the end of the day, it's all about the human dynamics and how, like, it's a workplace. How do you integrate all those, you know, all those insights and bring it to the workplace and apply and tell the leaders, like, look, this is the things that work and don't work and try it out. I mean, I can imagine that's sometimes hard for leaders to listen, right?
Yes, exactly. I think it's coming from that partnership mindset, just really ensuring like alignment from the start. You're really clear on what you want to do, how you want to achieve it, having a brief. But I think, you know, a turning point for me at least was just understanding that it's the culture, and I talk about workplace culture and leadership that really shapes everything. I think you've got to have that culture, and without the right environment, without the right context, I mean, even the best insights just won't drive change. So it really takes a team effort, especially with help from senior leaders at the top, to sort of create that consumer-centric environment, for sure.
And without trying to have like such a hard question, but what makes a good leader?
What makes a good leader? Good question. Maybe I can talk a little bit about my research. So that's what I can talk about. I think that's a great question that's debated quite a lot. So what I'm really looking at is the relationships between employees and their managers. And I started this, just to give you a bit of context, at the end of 2021. And so this happened, you know, shortly after COVID in the 2020, right? And, you know, why did I start this research? Well, I noticed, you know, in the workplace, because I work with a lot of cross-functional teams, that, you know, a lot of people were off sick during COVID, not because of COVID, during COVID, after COVID. And when I asked why, people just thought, well, they're sick, they're on burnout. But it was just that. It was just a very flippant statement. And I really wanted to understand, well, why is this happening? This is a problem. It's almost like the next pandemic is this whole burnout pandemic. And that's where it all started. And I think a lot of the burnout research focuses on the what. And when I say the what, I mean workload. And what my research found is that it's not only the what, it's the manager has a massive influence on employees' well-being. So I think that's the first important thing to highlight, that as a manager, you have a responsibility. But also middle managers, they're stressed, especially because they're in the middle of the organization. So they're sort of balancing the senior executives at the top and also their team. And there's not that training, you know, that's there. And I think what we often hear is this catchphrase. You hear, well, I just heard it the other month. It's not personal, it's just business. And I really disagree with that. I think business is very real. It's very personal. That's what my doctorate studies has shown. One of the first exercises I did was just to get people to sort of visualize themselves through drawings, right? Just put it on paper any way they wanted. They could build things, they could color, they could do anything, just to help them explain. And I think, look, whether it's a big T or a little T, everyone has some sort of trauma that they're dealing with at work. And I think we just have to understand that and be a bit more vulnerable as a manager. And organizations are built all around relationships. People really determine the success or the failure of your organization. And I think if senior leadership can recognize that and help managers as well get the training and help them get to understand their employees and see signs of burnout before it happens, this can really help ensure also the business success. So I think, you know, this is a big one, just having empathy, being vulnerable, opening up. And I have a couple of quotes. I did write down a couple of quotes. Maybe I can share them with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My research.
Of course.
Because I think these quotes for me just help brought it to life, because it's not just a data point. It's not just a quantitative metric. These are really, you know, what is coming from people. So, you know, one of the respondents said, you know, I've been working nonstop. I have no minute for myself, dropping off my bag, going out for work dinners, coming back at midnight, people wanting to catch up, getting up at 2 a.m., getting up at 6, having breakfast. And he goes on and on. I mean, you feel just tired listening to it, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's saying it's very intense. You know, I was at a work lunch. I was surrounded by at least 10 people. The discussion was ongoing. I felt my heart racing and I just stood up and said, guys, I need a moment. The next minute I knew I collapsed and I went to the nearest hospital in an ambulance. And this is not a one-off story. I had many examples of this. Another one was, you know, I was exhausted due to really bad management. Even worse than that, a sense of betrayal. They didn't protect me. But I also felt like I was the middle of the fire, knowing very well that it was impossible for me to succeed. When I moved on to another job, they replaced me with at least 3 people, and one of those people actually died. So that's another quote that came from my research. Whoa. And a final one, if I can share it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they say, I think it wasn't just the overall workload that was the issue. It was the lack of appreciation. Our CEO would always say, not good enough, not fast enough, not big enough, no matter what we did. This constant lack of appreciation really brings you down. It's not about the quantity of work. It's about feeling like nothing you do is ever good enough. When you're always working towards someone else's agenda and not your own, it strips away your self-determination. But above all, it's just the lack of appreciation that plays a really big role in wearing you down. So I think for me, the message is that it's not, You know, I think this is about great research. It's not just about a piece of data, but it's really about people. It's about culture, and it's about the environment, actually. And managers play a massive, massive part in that.
I love. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say for the first time. I don't know what to say, but it's. I just feel like we're all people at the end of the day, and I feel like sometimes, especially at work, this really happens at work, but in whatever company, one way or the other, that kind of happens. But I feel like people forget it at the other side or on the other side of the email or at the other side of the meeting room, whatever it is. Yeah. It's a person.
Yep.
It has it. And I remember when I was in university, I had this teacher that he was really strict, but he was like, I have my problems at home. I have my personal life. And when I step out the door, I have my personal life. But when I get in, I have my professional cape and everything. And for a few, I don't know, for a few, like the first years of university, I was like, I don't know how he does it. And, you know, but then I start to understand, like, that's probably not the way to do it. It's like, it's almost like when you step into the room, just are not a person anymore. And then you treat us not like we're not persons.
Yeah.
And I always found that so strange. And then at work, it happens as well. Like, people just are so focused on the next goal, the next point that we have to reach, the next profit, margin, whatever it is, these big words. And then we forget that we're human.
That's a good point. I mean, we've all heard of the phrase work-life balance. So that's what you're really touching on a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't like this term, and it came up a lot in the research as well, that, you know, a lot of people, especially women too, if they've got kids at home as well, but it's just constant juggle. And it's very, very hard to make that divide and say, well, okay, I've got my home life, I close the door, forget that and come to work. We're integrating our work and our life. And I think managers need to understand that, whether you have kids, don't have kids, single, in a family, whatever it is, but everyone has a life. So I think we have to respect that. And the research shows that it helps the business. People are more engaged, they're more productive, less prone to burnout when people feel appreciated, when they feel valued, when they feel listened to. So, you know, the causes of burnout are well known. There are actually eight causes. It's workload, control, reward, community, fairness, and values. But, you know, what my research really showed as well, that it's very much relational. It's very much relational, where your manager has a huge part. I mean, I did 60 hours of interviews, had more than 200 drawings. And, you know, everyone I talked to, they knew someone that had suffered from burnout due to their manager. That's shocking. And, you know, 40% had suffered from burnout themselves. And I think even that figure is underrepresentative, because even when they were explaining their stories, it did sound a lot like burnout in a lot of cases. But there's still a stigma, and there's still a, you know, people don't always want to discuss it. But I think if managers can really empower their employees, it's only going to help the business.
I agree. I completely agree. Like, yeah, it's an understanding that you can have your problems, you can have your moments. And and it's really interesting that you're mentioning women and how women perceive this, because when we started working on this, and it was kind of our connection that we have, it was Jack Miles. I was discussing with him the other day that we were putting together this series about, you know, voices of market research. And he was like, okay, that's really important to talk about women and especially working moms. Because that's something that people don't really talk about in the industry, is how the role of being a mom, and how when you become a mom, the work just completely changes, and your life changes in so many ways. And sometimes the managers and the teams and the companies, I just feel like they don't really understand that, even if they're already moms or if they already passed through that experience, but then they kind of forget that that's a thing. And yeah, sometimes it's just more hard work because you're struggling with, you know, being a first-time mom or not, and then you have to work, and I don't know, it's hard.
Yeah, and I think it's also just the societal norms. I mean, dads want to spend time with their kids too, so give more parental leave to also the dads, right? There were some stories that came through in my doctorate studies about there are simple things that businesses can do. Like, if you're doing all of your team building activities where, you know, a lot of the time you're discussing business, if it's all happening outside of working hours, it can make it very difficult for working parents to attend. So just finding more opportunities for those sort of things within business hours, so people are not sort of burning both ends of the candle, you know? So just there are some really simple things that can be done, and just making sure that you have sort of different voices and diversity in those in those boardrooms. So when the big decisions are being made, you're representing the people that you work with and bringing in different people of expertise. And I think we talked a lot about learning as well. And I think we all know the case with Google and how they give this 20% passion time where people can work on their passion projects during working hours. And that's how Gmail was born. And I think that is also, things like this are just really important to sort of give opportunities to everyone to also work on passion projects that can be the next business innovation. So it's not just about caring about people and being a good human being, but it's helping your business actually succeed in the end.
Exactly. That's right. I want to ask about upcoming projects and researches. And how do you see this problem? Like, do you see that it's becoming worse? Do you see that it's, especially when it comes to burnout in the workplace, do you see that are we taking any steps that is making it better, or is it just becoming worse? Please don't say that it's becoming worse.
I think business leaders need to pay more attention to it. I think one area that, probably coming from a positive perspective, that excites me is just the whole future of people analytics and people insights. And part of that is, you know, workplace well-being. What my research has shown, and a lot of other research, you know, managerial behavior can be one of the most overlooked drivers of burnout and well-being. And I think for too long, to be honest, HR departments are sort of, they're making decisions without proper data, without proper insights. And I think, you know, internally within organizations, I think where the industry is going is there's just so much more that can be done, especially with generative AI and AI in general, but just, you know, using that to also help you, you know, forecast and predict as well, like what could be happening. I mean, it's such a fascinating area, and I think there's so much more that we can do. And I think the goal should really be to try and prevent burnout before it happens. Because the one thing with burnout is a lot of people are burning out, but they don't actually realize that they're burning out. So it's very hard. You know, there's a lot of trainings that say, well, you know, also get to know your employees and, you know, make them safe to want to come and talk to you. Absolutely. But because people don't actually recognize that it's happening, you've also got to look for the signs as a manager and be trained in it as well. So I think the whole people insights and analytics area is just fascinating. But I think as much as sort of the generative AI and AI, but also looking at sort of real-time data as well and qualitative research, mobile first, there's so many other forms of data that can help you develop insights, photo, video feedback. There's so much more implicit ways. So, I mean, I'm really excited by that for the future.
That's fantastic. And I know that I said this in the beginning, that I thanked you for being here and to bring us this insights and expertise, but I really do feel inspired by it. And I feel inspired by your work. And I feel like everyone that's listening also will feel in some kind of way inspired by the things that you're saying, because it's such an important topic that we don't really discuss it every day. But it's an important thing to just ask your colleagues if they're okay, if the workload is okay, especially if you're a manager. But even if you're not, like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Do you need help? Can I help you with something? And I know that at SMR, we try to do that as much as possible. And sometimes we just can't do it and we forget about those things. But it's so important. And I feel really inspired by everything that you said. So thank you so much for being here and for this time. And that's all for us today. Thank you so much, Elise, for the insightful conversation. And I just want to give a quick note before we end that next week we'll be in Lima, Peru, for the SMR LATAM conference Altitudes, where we will elevate, per se, this podcast. We will do a live recording of Talking Insights for the first time ever with Brenda and Layla. They are the RGT winners from last year, and they have a brilliant project that touches sustainability and culture and the indigenous people in Peru. Stay tuned. The recording will be available the next day, and I think it's going to be a very interesting, and I hope to see y'all there. And if you don't have your tickets yet, we still have a few available. So join us and learn everything that you want to learn about the Latin America region on the market research and insights industry. Thank you so much. As always, please like and subscribe. It really means a lot for us and it makes a difference for the show. And with nothing else to do, I'll see you on the next one. Bye.